right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show is a little bit of a tough one because it is one of the most original, strange movies of the year. It is High Life from director Clara Denis, starring Robert Pattinson, Juliette Binoche, Mia Goth, and this is a very, very crazy movie, one that I've been looking forward to posting this episode for a while now. We actually recorded this episode back when it was in theaters, planned on, you know, holding it off until the VOD release because not enough people were going to be able to see it in theaters. And then it wasn't supposed to come out till July, and all of a sudden, there it is, it's on VOD. So you can go watch it now if you haven't yet, you definitely should. Although, I don't really know if spoilers would really mess you up too much with this one. This is an experience movie, and so I think you'll enjoy it. Well, okay, I should stop myself right there. I don't know if you'll enjoy it, because this is definitely not a movie for everybody, but it is a great movie, and it is absolutely crazy and something to be seen. So you should go watch it, whether you enjoy it or not. Then you should listen to this episode. My co-host for the episode is returning co-host B. Garner from Filmotomy and a whole bunch of other online sources, film critic. I am glad to have her back on the show again, and we got a great conversation for you. So before we get into it, I do want to remind you, as always, to please make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You could also find us on social media at Piecing Pod, join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and if you like what you hear on the show, you know, you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and even better than that, because, you know, I don't care about Apple Podcasts. I mean, yeah, it's supposed to be the cool thing to do. It's what, you know, every podcast asks for, you know, but what I really would love, you know, if you like this show, I'd love it if you just share it with people, because I want more people to hear this show. So share away, and that would be so cool. So let's get into this conversation about High Life. All right, so back with us on the show again is B. Garner. B, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you very much for inviting me back on.
Yeah, absolutely. We have another A24 film to talk about, actually, which, I mean, you're going to be here for a bunch of A24 films, I guess, going forward, maybe. We'll see what happens. But
that's yeah, fine thanks with me.
So, High Life is absolutely definitely going to be a weird one for us to talk about. I mean, this movie, I walked out of it myself just kind of, I knew I liked it immediately. I was like, oh yeah, this, I dig this, but I really didn't know exactly what to make of it for certainly the first, like, I don't know, few hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, maybe still right now. I don't know, but it's a weird one, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a really hard film to sort of process at the time. Like you say, you come out and you're just like, what did I watch? And it's kind of been haunting my dreams as well. Like, it's definitely a film that I just feel like I can't shake off, really.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that is completely warranted. One thing I'd like to get out of the way before we jump into Puzzle Pieces is an admission, and that is I have not seen any of Clara Denis' other films. Were you very versed in her films before this
one? Oh my
one?
Gosh, thank God that you admitted to that, because I haven't either, and I feel really bad about it. It's just the fact that I've been meaning to, and I just don't know where to start, so I feel like I started with High Life.
Yeah, I mean, from everything I've understood, even before watching High Life, I mean, she's a big, you know, provocateur kind of filmmaker, and it's not an easy place to start anywhere, I don't think, within her filmography, from what I understand. And so, yeah, there's never really a good entry point. And yeah, I just, none of her other films, I'd always, you know, I'd been aware of her as a filmmaker that people really enjoyed or hated, you know, just one of those kind of filmmakers. But I had certainly not seen any of her other movies. And I'm very interested in going back and starting to watch some of them now.
Yeah, me too. I definitely feel like she's one of these filmmakers that I feel you just want to go back and have a look at or like how they've reached this point with the, you know, with like the latest film. How did they get here? I mean, it's just,
yeah,
like you say, it's
what
I feel,
makes this person tick.
Yeah, that's what I want to work out. So yeah, High Life, oh my gosh.
Well, let's start jumping into High Life. What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
Okay, so this first puzzle piece is Upstream Color. I don't know if you know this film. I don't know if many people know it. It's a really weird film. Like, trying to describe the plot of this movie is really hard to do in like two sentences, but it is a film where there's a man and a woman who are sort of they never really are named, and they're drawn together and by this sort of weird like worm that gets inserted into one of both of them, I think, and then they sort of lose their sense of identity, and then they begin to their lives sort of begin to fall apart, but they become connected to each other. And I get that it's not the idea that it's not set in space, this film, but it is a science fiction film, and it's very sort of non-linear like narrative. It's very ambiguous. It's very sort of surreal moments in the movie, and there's the themes of like life and death and identity. And this, you know, this art house independent film. And I feel like High Life has a lot of that. Like, it's very sort of a film that you can't really describe the plot all that well in two sentences. like, trying to describe what really happens in it and not give away too much information. And also the way that it is sort of dealing with themes of life and death, and has this really ambiguous ending as well. It just reminded me so much of Upstream Color.
It sounds really interesting. I have not seen Upstream Color. That sounds like the kind of just really weird brainy sci-fi that really like messes with you a little bit and becomes very difficult to really, you know, discern what exactly is going on, what are the messages involved, but that there are clearly things that are being said, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's very much a visual film where there's not very much dialogue, and I feel like High Life is a film that almost, you could take away all of the dialogue and you would almost still follow the movie. Even though, like, I don't know whether you would even be able to follow it more without the dialogue.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think you're actually very right there. I think that this movie would work pretty well without the dialogue. I think, you know, it really is about, it's almost an experiment. You know, it's obviously an experiment on the characters, but then the movie itself is almost very much like watching an experiment unfold and seeing what happens. I have not seen Upstream Color, but you know, the way you're talking about it, kind of, I think I'm going to go to this one puzzle piece first. And this one, you know, every once in a while on the show, we'll have a puzzle piece that really is too new to have truly inspired the movie. But I still, you know, will sometimes want to bring one up anyway, even though it's so new. And that is this year's Climax. From Gaspar Noé.
Yeah.
And I, you know, obviously it couldn't have possibly inspired the movie, but I think it comes from the same kind of a place of putting these people in this just crazy situation and watching as they kind of, they lose, you know, a little bit of what makes them human, and they're kind of just breaking down to almost animal, you know, instincts. And it's really just interesting. I think, and we did an episode on Climax, and, you know, we talked about whether or not Gaspar Noé really had any meaning behind any of it, or if we're just kind of putting the meaning onto it after the fact. I do think Claire Denis is
trying to say things with High Life, whereas Gaspar Noé, I think, was just trying to do something really weird and crazy, and whatever happens, happens. So it's definitely two different kinds of places, but both stemming from the idea of let's put people through just awfulness and see what happens to them.
Yeah, I definitely get. I was thinking of Climax while I was watching High Life, and in terms of just like the idea of this isolation and not being able to escape from somewhere. Although in Climax they kind of can escape, but they won't get very far.
Right.
Literally in High Life they would get there's no escape.
They're not going anywhere. And you know, another thing I didn't mention that the two also kind of share is just like a hyper violence and a hyper sexualized violence. You know, there's a lot of they're done in very different ways, but there's still a lot of that. And that goes back to what I was saying about like the bringing people to like a somewhat animalistic, you know, mindset. And there ends up being a lot of violence against women, and it's handled in different ways. But it's there in both films.
Yeah. I found like in Climax, the violence to me was, very hard to watch, but in High Life I found it even worse in a way.
Yes.
I don't know whether that was because it was a female director, so maybe they were, especially like the violence towards the female characters was a lot more shocking for me. And I think perhaps maybe because, you know, it's a female director, they might see it for what it is, really. But they're both really like films where the violence just almost comes out of nowhere, like you're dreading it, but you, when it does come, it doesn't come at a point where you expect it to come, almost.
Right. Yeah, it's very unpredictable and very and that keeps you very unsettled. I think there's an unsettling tone between both movies, and honestly I think a few of my other puzzle pieces are going to have an unsettling tone along the way, so this is a very unsettling movie, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So what do you have for your next puzzle piece?
Talking about unsettling films, I'm going with 2014's Under the Skin. Have you seen Under the Skin?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a really weird movie, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Which I think for me the reason why I put this on my list was the moment I see Robert Pattinson's character dropping this, is it a spanner or a wrench? When he's making repairs to the spacecraft at the beginning of the film, and it just falls into nothingness. And it kind of reminded me, like, in Under the Skin, when they go to this sort of alien spaceship, and it's all this, it's almost like nothingness there, and like how she seduces the men, and they all sort of break apart, and they're this, like, I don't want to give too much away about Under the Skin because it's really also another film that's really hard to sort of describe as well. Like, it's a visual movie, like with High Life as well. But it's just that idea of just there is nothing. And the sort of these characters, like, you see their sort of mortality, like one false move, and especially in High Life, if he slips and falls, that's it. He's just gone.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just disappeared into nothing, into nothingness, and that creates such a tension of such a different kind of a horror, and but combined with this more psychological horror of things that are happening on the ship, it's just two different kind of horrors that like mesh together in a way, in a movie that's not even really a horror movie. So it's it leads to a lot of unsettling feelings.
Well, I looked up the, before I sort of watched High Life, I was looking at it and trying to find out some more information. And people describe it as a horror film, but I don't know. It's not like the standard horror film.
Yeah.
It's like, is it a horror film? But I think it is, but it's not like a slasher movie or anything. It's psychological horror, and I feel like Under the Skin has that sort of psychological horror aspect to it. But again, it's also a film that has a lot to do with sex.
Yes.
And seduction, and that is something that happens in High Life quite a bit.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of very disturbing scenes related to that. Well, I'm going to go with another puzzle piece, and I'm sure we're going to get back to a lot of that as we're going through all of our puzzle pieces. But, you know, obviously the main draw for this movie for me, having not seen Claire Denis's other films, was Robert Pattinson, you know, coming off, you know, Good Time, which I think is one of the best movies of this decade. His performance, just incredible. My first puzzle piece, well, actually my second puzzle piece, but is Moon. With Sam Rockwell on an isolated spaceship and, on the moon, actually, not, you know, space station, I guess. What do you call that? A station
moon,
on a moon?
Moon base.
Moon base. There you go. That's what it's called. I felt like the world that Robert Pattinson is inhabiting on this base, on his ship, is very kind of similar in a way to Moon's reality. I think it's it's futuristic, but it's not super futuristic. It's very tied to modern technology mixed with a little bit in the future technology. It's also very well spelled out what his daily life is. There's so much I guess you would say world building, but there's so much you really kind of get the sense of, you know, what this character's daily life is like on that ship. And that all adds to another amazing Robert Pattinson performance, really, because, you know, watching him, I almost like his scenes when he gets to be alone and just, you know, him and the baby just, you know, living it out on the ship, almost more than the rest of the movie when he's, you know, has to interact with all these other people, just because he's so interesting. He's such an interesting performer, and just, you know, watching him and the way that him and the baby are just living, there's so much, it's such an interesting sci-fi portrayal is basically what I'm saying. And that was how I always used to feel about Moon as well, back when that first came out. I love that movie.
Yeah, I really love that movie too. And I think for me, with High Life, I really wanted more of those scenes.
Yeah.
I just, like, that's what I felt was more interesting. Like, I don't get me wrong, I love all this sort of how the prisoners fall apart and how this situation has happened, why he's alone. But for me, the film could have taken a real different direction. But I don't know, like, would people have really wanted to watch?
When you have a baby actor as good as that baby, you might as well, you know, get your money's worth out of that baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
So my next one is a film called Sunshine. From 2007, directed by Danny Boyle. And this reason, again, kind of like, you know, with Moon, in terms of like the technology, you were saying, like, you believe it, you know, like it's not far-fetched sort of Star Trek type of technology, you know, with like faster than light sort of jump speed and all that sort of stuff. This is feels very sort of organic in a way, you know, like you can picture, like, in a few years this is probably what it's going to be like, it's, you know, being in space. But Sunshine, again, the reason I sort of picked this is in High Life there is a sort of mission of them, there's to go and look at this black hole and observe it and find an energy source, isn't it? It's all very vague, I think. But there's a sense that this is a suicide mission and there's sure. really no coming back from this. In Sunshine, it is again a suicide mission for to try and save the dying son with a device that sort of is like a atomic bomb. They're going to
right.
take a bomb and throw it at the sun. But there's a previous mission that's gone to do the same thing, but they failed. But the ship meets up with that mission, and you get a sense that people went mad on the earlier ship and ended up killing each other. And that happens in High Life, is people yeah. going mad on a spaceship. So as well, I think I read something quite interesting about High Life, that the director consulted with real life scientists about the effects of being near a black hole, and mm-hmm. real science was something that Boyle looked at and spoke to scientist Brian Cox about. So there's again a lot of like blending of science fiction and science fact, which huh. I really like about that. So I thought that was interesting that both movies did that. Yeah, Sunshine is a film that I think not enough people have seen.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's a very unsettling film, and it's odd as well. And by the way, you know, speaking of black holes, it was crazy that we got our first look at a black hole the same week that this movie hit theaters, which was pretty damn cool and coincidental. I'm sure that they were psyched about that. And you know what? One other thing. About Sunshine as a puzzle piece, and I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't recall, but do we ever get to see or hear from the people who are, you know, who started that mission, like who sent them on that mission? Because I think that's one of the interesting things about High Life is that, you know, we know what their mission is, but we don't know really who sent them there. Like we don't ever get to see them telling, you know, like explaining the mission or anything. We're only getting the mission information from these people who are stuck and, like you said, on a suicide mission. And the psychological effects of that, you know, another thing that adds to that creepiness.
I can't really recall in Sunshine, but there's definitely like an idea of like they're really out there and there's nobody.
Right.
There's like, that's it. That's just them. And I think as well, finding the abandoned ship reminded, yeah. like in High Life, they find an abandoned ship with all these dogs. Yeah. And I just want to know, like, were there humans on board that ship or was it just dogs?
I like to think it was just dogs.
I have this feeling that the humans died and the dogs ate them. Like, I don't know, but the idea of just finding something really scary about that to me, like out of all the things in space travel, like just coming across an empty vessel.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, it's super creepy. And I like to think that I would be really excited because I love dogs so much, and like I would be like, oh, I get to see some dogs finally. But yeah, I mean, it is really, really creepy. Like when you step foot and there's just a bunch of snarling dogs and a bunch of dead ones.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, actually, that's another thing about this movie, the violence against dogs, yeah. You know, along with the violence against women. I mean, it, you know, it's really kind of digging into things that we don't normally, you know, want to see violence against in movies, you know?
Yeah, I felt really uncomfortable and I just wanted, I was like, oh, please, I can't. I was more upset about the dogs, really.
Oh, yeah, of course. Me too.
And the puppies.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
It's like, come on, take a puppy back. You could do it.
Do you think they had toys on that ship? I hope so.
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. Before this gets too silly, I'll jump in with another puzzle piece. It's another sci-fi film, one that, you know, deals with the importance of trying to make and protect a baby that's children of men.
I really nearly put this on my list and I didn't. Yeah. I'm so glad that you brought this up.
Yeah, and the ship's, you know, purpose, you know, aside from the black hole, also they seem to have, and I'm not quite sure if it was their initial purpose or if it's just something they came up with while they were up there, but it seems like that the doctor, played by Juliette Binoche, has decided that they want to try to make a baby that can withstand radiation while they're up there. And so making a baby becomes like this huge thing, and it becomes her, you know, her whole mission to do that. And then once that baby is there and everybody else has gone nuts and is dead, I mean, it's Robert Pattinson wants to, you know, keep this baby safe and alive. And it becomes a personal mission for himself after the fact, after it's already here. And I think that same drive for humanity that Children of Men has, and you know, it's interesting too, these people being them being incarcerated for, you know, seemingly all very violent offenses, I believe is what's implied. I'm not sure if it's specifically stated that they're all violent criminals, but you know, that act of you know, raising a child becoming a way to bring back humanity.
The more that you say, I have a feeling that that wasn't even like the actual mission. I feel like she made that up.
Right.
Like, I just have this feeling that she's just like, I need to pass the time. How can I do this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is definitely your mission, guys. Trust me. You know, I've spoken to people. It just seems a bit like, she kind of reminded me of like a Dr. Frankenstein type of character. Yeah.
Plus, she called herself a witch, and witches need babies for their special potions and brews and all that kind of stuff. Where else is she going to get a baby for her next potion?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, we should mention real quick before moving on to the next puzzle piece. She's amazing as well, along with Robert Pattinson. But yeah, I mean, she is just super crazy, just very, what a performance. And, you know, obviously there's the sex room scene, which a lot of people are talking about when it comes to this movie. That seems to be all anybody talks about, which is why I wasn't really even bringing it up yet. But you kind of have to mention it at least a little bit along the way.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much about that character like to unpick, and she, like, when we find out why she's been, you know, jailed, and it's just done in sort of almost like matter of fact way. She's, you know, it's just such a unsettling thing when you look at this person and you think, wow, she really is dangerous. Like, she's probably like, out of all the people on board that ship, you know, you're the one that you really don't want her on there. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she plays it just so well. She's so frightening and weird for what should be a generally in charge character, you know. But like, I guess there's a little bit of a commentary on authority, you know, her being an authority figure and these being, you know, prisoners. They, you know, in a regular prison situation, their authority figure is going to be someone who they, you know, don't like. But in this one, in this particular situation, it's not just don't like, it's they should be absolutely fearful of, because she's nuts.
Yeah. Well, this is a perfect sort of segue into my next puzzle piece.
Okay.
So my next puzzle piece is the Stanford Prison Experiment, which is a movie on the famous social experiment. I believe the movie came out in 2015, but the Stanford Prison Experiment was this experiment where they had like volunteers who... some were going to be prison guards and some were going to be prisoners. And it was sort of to see the psychological effects of perceived power And it was meant to go on for about 2 weeks, and I think they cancelled it, and it got so extreme that they, was it 5 days? I don't even know if it was 5 days. It, you know, these prisoners were then tortured in a way, the power really went to the other volunteers' head, really, and they started losing their humanity. And I feel like really High Life is, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if it turned out it was all just a social experiment, and you know, they weren't really on a spaceship, you know, it was all just an experiment to see how the effects of being in having power corrupts people. So
sure,
I definitely got that, and I just thought the movie of it is really great. I think it's got Adam Driver in it, I believe.
Yeah, I just brought it up right here. I can't believe I don't remember this movie because it's only a few years old. I need to seek this one out because it sounds really good, really crazy.
Yeah, the actual, because I studied sociology at college as well as film, but the actual the experiment is just when you read up and you find out what happened to, you know, between the guards and the prisoners, and the guards really went quite crazy, making the prisoners taking away all their food, locking them up. And the thing was, this was just supposed to be a bit of fun and a bit a harmless university experiment, and it got to the point where there's no way you could get away with it now. It was obviously the 70s where everything went in the 70s.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a very famous experiment, and they've done a great film with it, but definitely thought I had this sort of feeling is High Life going to be is the twist going to be I just have thought there has to be a twist, and I was is it going to be that it's just experiment?
Sure, yeah.
It's not real, they're not really in space, but I definitely got that sort of vibe from it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought for sure that there was going to be something like that at one point, or at least some kind of, there was actually a hidden separate reason that they didn't realize they were there or something like that. But yeah, and then it just goes in directions you wouldn't really expect. I'd love that you're bringing that up, though, for a puzzle piece. I was trying to think of movies where, social experiments are done on prisoners, and I couldn't really think of one. So I'm definitely glad you brought that one up. And it's interesting, this movie dealing with, the effects of incarceration and seeing just, it's definitely a commentary that's very, current, especially a lot of, politics, talking about the prison system and the reform that's really needed in the prison system and all that. And, it's not very difficult to imagine a future where, awful things like this are done to prisoners who maybe didn't do all that much to really be in prison in the first place.
My concern is, what did those dogs do?
They were bad dogs. So I will go with another puzzle piece here. And this one kind of goes along with the last one with Children of Men. That is The Road, which, is more of a story about a father and daughter survival, a wasteland type of post-apocalyptic situation. Whereas in this case, once we get through all of the flashbacks showing us, what exactly happened to this spaceship, we're left with Robert Pattinson and his daughter now grown up on the spaceship and just trying to, in this really, awful situation that's there's really no hope, but still trying to give her something of a life on that spaceship. And again, we were both kind of touching on this earlier. I almost wish we could get more of it, as good as a lot of the rest of the movie was, that stuff is really, it's heartbreaking, but beautifully done. You know, really great performance by Robert Pattinson, and the girl who plays the daughter does a wonderful job, you know, and both the baby daughter and grown up and, both do great jobs. And but yeah, it's just really, really, when you think about it, the fact that he's raising this daughter, knowing that there's no, and raising her so well, knowing that there's no chance of, you know, a future, is it's very heartbreaking and very, you know, very beautiful at the same time.
And I think The Road, yeah, is another film that has a really bleak ending.
Yes.
And depending on how you read it, like, it's a happy ending, but at the same time, you think they're not really going to last that long, like, really.
Yeah.
And High Life is a film where it's like, yeah, what is going to happen to them? Like,
yeah,
they're going to go through this black hole. And nobody, like, time, there's a theory that time stops once you go through a black hole and you're just falling and falling for eternity.
Mm.
And that's more frightening to me than actually just being turned into spaghetti, which is what happens in the film. Like, it's just like, blah. So I feel like the idea of just like both those films, there's no really good outcome.
That's the thing about space. Space is a little dangerous.
Yeah, this is why I just, yeah, I'm not going to space ever. So no.
Not on your to-do list?
No, definitely not.
Okay, good. You're still going to stick around and just watch movies here on Earth?
Yeah, it's probably the safest type of thing for me. Yeah, especially after watching High Life.
Yes, absolutely. All right, what do you got for your next puzzle piece?
So my next puzzle piece is kind of like what you were sort of touching upon in terms of like this idea of isolation and children being brought up in isolation and sort of being cut off from the world. This is a quite of an unusual one, so bear with me, but I'm going with the 2009 film Dogtooth by Yorgos Lanthimos, director of The Favourite. And this film is about a controlling father who locks his three adult children in their house, so they just remain as children, really, even though they're adults, so they act childish. And they haven't been outside of their house. They don't really have this really sheltered way of life. And, you know, there's bits where they ask questions, and I think there's a funny bit where I can't remember exactly what it is, but they say a word and the mother says, she picks up a fork and she says, oh, this is what it is, you know, like, so they don't really know anything about the world outside of these walls. And I got this feeling like when I was watching High Life, especially with the puppies, and she really wants to have a puppy that you know, Robert Pattinson, her father, finds. And I think, like, this is a child who has been brought up in a ship. She's never seen another animal, like, she's never seen another human being, only in their image. And now she's seeing them, and she's really lived a sheltered life. That's like, she's still sharing a bed with him. She's like in her, I guess, late teens. So there's really sort of like this taboo sort of situation on there, and it's like how she's spoken away as well. It's kind of, she acts like kind of childish in her speaking, and I feel like they really could have gone down a really different path of like their relationship. Luckily the film didn't go down that way, and I was grateful that it did. But I was just getting this really sort of like, yeah, if you know, this is a girl who's kind of reminded me a lot of like the people in Dogtooth, like how she acted. And I just had that sort of, I just wanted to get in there. And it's a really interesting film, so I do sort of recommend people going to seek that one out, but not set in space though.
Yes.
But
Yeah, and I think going with what you were just talking about, though, with the way that that she is raised and the way that she's, you know, very kind of childish. And I think it's really interesting, actually. It makes a lot of sense because, you know, Robert Pattinson's character is the only one around to raise her. I mean, he's probably a fairly stunted emotionally, personality, being the kind of criminal back on Earth that he was. And so it kind of, I feel like it would almost make sense that he wouldn't be, he wouldn't really have all the tools necessary to raise her, even though he did a pretty good job.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, you would run out of things to say eventually, wouldn't you?
Sure.
How's the weather today? There's no weather. We're in space. Oh, okay.
Remember that time we killed everyone else on the ship?
Oh, that was great. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, space is a bitch. Well, I only have one more puzzle piece, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. And it is one that comes up a lot of times when dealing with outer space movies, and that is 2001, Stanley Kubrick's film. A matter of searching for big answers in outer space. I think it comes back to that a lot of the time when, you know, dealing with any movie that's looking for, you know, big kind of answers, asking big questions, and all doing it within the setting of outer space and a spaceship. It's kind of hard for it to not show up on a list of puzzle pieces when dealing with that kind of a smart sci-fi film. And then, of course, also, even though Claire Denis doesn't go all the way crazy with it, we do get some pretty wild visuals towards the end with the black holes and all that.
And, of course, we've got someone sort of higher in like power and authority with Hal, you know? Sort of super intelligent. He's obviously a computer, but he's someone you feel like you should trust and rely on, and then he goes crazy. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, another thing about that computer, and I forget if I read this as a theory or if it was something that Claire Denis actually said specifically, but the idea that his logs aren't actually going anywhere is just a bit of a mind fuck, and it really is it just adds a whole another layer to it that I think is very disturbing.
Yeah, when you think like how far away they are and the distance like they are away from planet Earth, like is there even a planet Earth there anymore? Like,
right.
Is anyone actually, like, are they just thinking, like, okay, those people are probably dead now. Like, you know.
Yeah. They're just long gone.
Yeah, that really, like, frightens me. But
yeah.
Film has left me feeling really sort of, like feeling very human.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But that's what I love about it. It's so great.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So do you have any other puzzle pieces left?
Yeah, I have I have a couple more, but one of the ones that really sort of stuck out to me is a little bit of a happier film is Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
Basically really for again the sort of father-daughter relationship. Like, I think we get that with High Life. There's definitely like a bond that they have, and really, I get the sense that there's not like he really would do whatever it takes to look after her and protect her. The same with Cooper and Murph in Interstellar. Like, he travels across like time and dimension and just to get back to her. And the visual effects as well, like we were saying, like High Life doesn't, a lot of the time is spent on the ship, but towards the end we do get some beautiful like visuals of the black hole and it reminded me quite a lot of like with Interstellar in that respect. And I think as well, another thing again is the fact that Nolan also consulted with real scientists, and a lot of stuff in High Life, there is a lot of real science behind that. So again, I just like the way that directors go out their way to try and get the real science into their movies. Like for me, that just shows like the level of attention to detail.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that she really she was really like, I think if you're gonna go and make your crazy outer space fever dream, like I think you could have easily just said whatever looks cool, but it seems like she really decided to go and try to ground this thing in a little bit of science, which kind of just adds to the creepiness factor when it comes down to it. Because the more realistic you can get it in this like horrifying situation, the creepier it's gonna be.
Yeah, I think it makes it just that little bit worse for me, is knowing that this isn't just something that's been made up. This is like, space can do this to you. So maybe we shouldn't be going to space, I'm right, just saying. Right.
Just maybe. So you said you had one more?
Yeah. Well, this is just pretty much two films by Lars von Trier. You either love him or you hate him. Or you, like me, you'd love to hate him. But the films that I were reminded of were Antichrist and Nymphomaniac. Just in terms of the sex scenes. Because we sort of discussed in High Life, there's a there's a very interesting room on that spaceship.
Yes.
And you do get some real sort of, some really like, just like a scene where you just like, I can't believe I'm watching this.
Absolutely.
And you think, that really reminded me of how Lars von Trier sort of films his sex scenes, especially with this like slow motion. It's like hypnotic to watch, very heightened. I guess really for me, again with like Antichrist and Nymphomania, that those scenes are very uncomfortable to watch at the same time. The characters going mad as well in an isolated setting is a major theme in Antichrist.
It's funny, people talk about the difference between like the male gaze and the female gaze. I'm not sure which gaze we're getting here, even though it's a female director, but in that scene it's just kind of something all its own, I think, which I think really kind of speaks to the originality of this film. It's not exactly what I would, if I was to speak to what I think a crazy masturbation sex room on an outer spaceship would look like, coming from a male director or a female director. I don't think it would be either of those. This is just so its own thing, the way that it's shot. I think that speaks loudly to just how weird this movie is.
Yeah, it's definitely original.
And then we get a very, very disturbing rape scene later as well with Juliette Binoche and Robert Pattinson, it's like it kind of transcends any kind of expectations of what you would see in a movie, and it's just something very, very different. I mean, I brought up earlier Gaspar Noé, and there's his Irreversible rape scene that people always talk about, but this is just so different. It's its own thing, and it's so very, very differently done in a way that you really haven't seen before, I don't think.
Yeah, I just like, you really don't want to shake her hand after watching that scene.
Yeah, great performance. Oh, man. Well, I think that brings us to our finished puzzle then, and then we'll get into any final thoughts we have on High Life. But the finished puzzle includes Upstream Color, Climax, Under the Skin, Moon, Sunshine, Children of Men, The Stanford Prison Experiment, The Road, Dogtooth, 2001, Interstellar, and Antichrist and Nymphomaniac. So, you know, with that said, you know, I'll jump in with my first closing thought, and then if you have any as well. But the thing, and I had kind of joked about this on Twitter as well, but I think it's so funny, you know, coming off of Good Time for Robert Pattinson. If you change like two lines of dialogue and the character's name to Connie, this could be a very, very strange sequel to Good Time. I mean, who knows what happens to Connie when he gets taken away in that cop car afterwards? It's possible.
That's true. That's so true. And also, like, I think the weird druggy tripping type of thing. This could just all be a bad trip for him.
Oh yeah, that's true too. That is absolutely true. And you know, really though, I mean, joking aside, Robert Pattinson, he is probably, at this point, I would say, and I mean, it's only a few movies, but he's kind of joined that ranks of like, I can't wait to see what he's going to do next as an actor. He's just one of the most exciting actors out right now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I would just say like Mia Goth as well. And it's
also
nearly like had Suspiria on my list in terms of like tone and just surrealness and that idea of like just people losing their humanity again the witchness, like witchcraft and stuff going on there. But she's brilliant in this, and he's definitely like, I felt like the character seemed most human to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, which is weird because she is such a strange performer. I mean, she picks these roles where she gets to be so weird and have such a strange presence. And for her to have so much humanity in that strangeness is, you know, it speaks a lot to that performance.
I really like, I haven't seen her in much, but like what I have seen her in is she's like very impressive. And Robert Pattinson, like Twilight, what?
That's like ancient history at this point. He is the new, he is now our Pats.
Yeah.
And amazing. Yeah, he rocks. And you know, one other thing about Mia Goth, I would love to see her just totally mess with everybody's expectations and just straight up do a romantic comedy next.
Oh my gosh, I was just thinking the same thing. Like
it would come completely out of nowhere. Who would see that coming?
Yeah, I think that she's got like this, she's almost like a chameleon, like, you know, can just sort of go into any role.
Yeah, she's an interesting character. You're right, I'm very much looking forward to seeing what else she does with this career, because I mean, so far I've only seen her in a few things, but she is very, very unique in her presence, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing more from her. And seeing more Claire Denis. I have to go back and watch some of her movies.
I'm excited as well. Like, you know, when I sort of, when you find a director like that and you watch one of their films and you think, I need to go back and watch the rest of your, like, cinematography to see what you've done. Like, and I was just thinking, like, I don't know very many women that have tackled the sci-fi genre or film set in space, and she's come and delivered something that is so highly original and not really like anything else. I mean, we've obviously just given our puzzle pieces, but most of mine were just mostly on mood and you know, my reaction, but there weren't anything similar in plot or characters or anything to do with High Life, because it's truly something that it is the most original film of this year. And I don't think there's anything that can top it.
I think you're absolutely correct. Well, you know, I think that about does it. As we always do, do you have anything you watched recently you'd like to recommend?
Oh, gosh, recently. I watch a lot of documentaries. I'm a huge sort of documentary nerd is probably the best way to put it, if you could be a nerd of documentary. Sure. But I would like to just recommend one that I've watched recently, which I think people should go and seek out if they get a chance. And it is a really good sort of documentary called Dirtbag. If anyone is a fan of Free Solo and rock climbing, I actually go rock climbing myself. This one is about a famous rock climber called Freddie Becky, who is spent his sort of years just roaming America, climbing all the mountains that he could find. And he was really sort of living on the fringes of society. He just drifted from one place to the next, and it is just sort of telling his story. And he was like 80 or 90 years old and still rock climbing. So it's like we're talking about like characters who are larger than life, like amazing. And it's a really sort of great, if you're looking for something after Free Solo and you're still obsessed with rock climbing, this is a documentary for you.
Yeah, I mean I did not expect to like Free Solo as much as I did, and it was just amazing. So that sounds great. That sounds really interesting. Right on. Well, B, where could people find your work?
Well, you can find my work at Filmotomy. I'm always writing on there. I've just written a piece about eighth grade, so that's looking at Generation Z. So that's definitely something to check out. And also write for Ready Steady Cut and Jump Cut as well. So definitely check those two sites out as well. And Filmotomy, we do our podcasts. So yeah, you can always catch me, and I'm always on Film Twitter. So.
Awesome. Great. Well, again, thanks so much for being here. And maybe next time we have you on, it won't be such a crazy movie, but we'll see what happens.
Maybe it'll be a romantic comedy.
There you go.
This is Todd from iHeart Geek. We believe that anything you're passionate about is geek. And if you are a geek, you are family here. We record once a week and would love to have you join in our conversations. You can get hold of us at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Use the .com, we paid extra for it. You can get us at Twitter at iheartgeekshow. And you can always search us on our Facebook page as well. And keep on geeking on!
You know, something just hit me while I was editing the episode, and that is that we recorded this before Robert Pattinson became Robert Pattinson. That's right. Robert Pattinson is the new Batman, and the internet lost its fucking mind when that was announced, because the internet's stupid, and the internet doesn't know that it's been like 10 years since the Twilight movies, and he has become one of the best actors working today in Hollywood. And if you're not excited for anything coming up with Robert Pattinson in it, you're out of your mind. You really should be excited for every new Robert Pattinson role, as I am, and I know B is. So anyway, grow up, internet. So that's the end of our High Life episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And of course, make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also share us with your friends. That would be amazing if you did that. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. We got a lot more episodes coming your way. We got some special episodes coming your way. We just have so much more Piecing It Together coming your way. So I am going to close this thing up with a piece of music, as I always do. And, you know, my first thought would have been to play The Void, because it goes along with the whole High Life theme. But I think I just played that recently with some other space-related movie. So I'm going to play another piece of music. And you know what? Here's one I definitely have never played before. It's a track called Pulse from a video game, a game called Breaker Breaker that I actually designed myself. And actually, another co-host of the show did the programming for it, Ryan Daugherty. But this kind of has a bit of a spacey vibe to it, so I think it would be a nice fit for this episode. This, of course, is not available anywhere except for in the game, but I may eventually make a little compilation of songs that were made for games and put that out there. I mean, why not? This music is just sitting around on my computer, and it should be listened to, so... I think I might have to get around to doing that one of these days. So anyway, this song is called Pulse. Enjoy it, and we will be back with more Piecing It Together soon.
And all points west.